The roads never lead where they're supposed to go. Part 2. If Shepard noticed Rodney didn't visit him while he was recovering from the gunshot wound, he didn't comment on it. He bounced back with resilience. A little more than a week after he was shot, he popped into Rodney's room, limping, asking if Rodney wanted to watch a DVD of extreme skateboarding he brought from Earth. He was wearing a tight black t-shirt with his tan slacks. Rodney was still pissed Shepard had almost died because he was a tease, but Shepard grinning through his obvious pain made Rodney's stomach flip-flop. "I don't like sports," Rodney said, but he made room on his couch anyway. "Not that skateboarding's a sport." "Skateboarding's about style, McKay," Shepard insisted, joining him. He propped his injured leg up on the Atlantean version of a coffee table. "It's about taking risks." "It's about breaking open your skull on the sidewalk," Rodney said. "When I was in high school, we used to do that." Shepard gestured to the screen, where a lanky man was sliding down a rail, and amazingly, not dying horribly. "And we played a lot of hacky sack." "Jesus, Shaggy, you were such a pothead," Rodney said. When Rodney was in high school, he was too busy being paid by the other kids to do their homework to do sports. Not that he was particularly athletic. As a kid, his father had forced him to play hockey and curl, but he was never very good at either of them. One fateful boxing day, he broke his leg during a curling game after falling while trying to sweep, and as a result, the other team won. His father never let him forget it. Rodney was thinking about team sports when he stumbled upon a miserable-looking Zelenka still in the labs at 3 a.m. Rodney had an excuse. He was this close to finishing rewriting the environmental controls so they could turn that cafe they'd discovered a few weeks ago into a place ideal for hanging out. But Zelenka was just sitting there, staring into space, glasses askew. "Not that I care or anything," Rodney said, "but why don't you go to bed?" "I'm just thinking about..." Zelenka shrugged, pushing his glasses back up. He pushed a button on his datapad. "What do you think of the team dynamics, Rodney?" Rodney said, "I think living here is a little like being in high school. You know, if your high school was a floating city in the middle of another galaxy, and everyone was either a science nerd or a jock trying to overcompensate for something." "Everyone hates each other," Zelenka said, almost sadly. "I keep having to break up fights. People keep requesting not to work with certain others, and because of this, our work is suffering. We could have so much done if they just stopped behaving like children." "That's because they're idiots," Rodney said. The next day, while Zelenka was at his daily meeting with Dr. Weir, Rodney rounded up everyone on the physics team first. He separated the troublemakers, Kavanaugh, Gall, Simpson, and switched up the projects. He'd been living long enough with these people to know how they worked. Not many people put up much fuss regarding their teammates, but some didn't want to give up their current project. "Are you allowed to do this?" Gall asked. He'd made a sour face when Rodney instructed him to work with Abrams. "Of course I am," Rodney lied coolly. Once he hacked the personnel files of everyone else, he rearranged the anthropologists, who tried to engage him in a discussion on the treatment of natives in Canada, the zoologists, who were playing catch with what looked like a cross between a zebra and a cow, only in miniature, and the chemists, who told him that if he touched something, they'd kill him slowly and painfully by slipping something into his food. He believed them. His authority was completely undermined in the botany lab. Every time he met Shepard's eyes, he burst out laughing, which then got Shepard going. Thanks to Shepard, the botanists now thought he was approachable, which filled Rodney with an unspeakable horror. "I don't see what your problem is," Shepard said. "They like you. Katie was asking me about you the other day." "If you told the botanists I'm available, I'll kill you in your sleep," Rodney said. Shepard said, "Trust me, I let them know you're unavailable." And he gave Rodney a really intense look. Bonnie frowned, trying to remember that day in the lab. What, you got a thing for Katie? Which one is she, anyway? The one with the mole, or the one who thinks my name is McBay? I don't have a thing for Katie Brown, Shepard snapped. And she's the short one, with the red hair. If Shepard was going to date someone, he could do better than a botanist, Ronnie figured. He needed someone smart and witty and willing to put up with his skateboarding and his vanity and his stupid jokes. Someone tall and leggy. Brunette, maybe. Not someone who worked with plants. Rodney tried to picture what kind of women Shepard must have dated on Earth, but his mind drew a blank. Then he tried to imagine what Shepard must have been like when he was out saving the rainforest. He assumed there was a lot of tie-dye involved. And not here, in the City of the Ancients, going back and forth across the galaxy to take samples of plants for the benefit of their 200-something population. You should wear black all the time, Rodney said, gesturing to Shepard's beady ears. Shepard cocked his head. You like the way I look in black? I didn't say that, Ronnie said. It shows the dirt too much, Shepard said regrettably. After that, Shepard started wearing a lot more black t-shirts. Ronnie figured he must have scavenged them from the packs he obviously bought at Walmart before they left, because even after days of wearing black, the shirts were definitely clean. Every time Shepard leaned, sat, or walked too close, he smelled nice in a way Rodney hadn't noticed before. Some of the other scientists, mostly the female ones, and Parrish, and even Ford started giving Rodney funny looks whenever they saw him and Shepard together, which was pretty often, because it wasn't like Rodney could stand anyone else. What the hell happened to the science team uniform? Rodney asked after a week of black shirts. Shepard stiffened. Nothing. I felt like a change. I wasn't wearing reg shirts before anyway. The itch. His wardrobe changed again. Along with the black shirts, he started wearing green, dark blue, and the regulation civilian light blue. On the days he wore white, Rodney found himself seeking out Shepard even more often. Although he tried not to do it too much. That was sort of gay. One day, while he was still in off-duty, thanks to his wound, and psychological trauma, Shepard said, gazing at Zelenka with wide, sincere eyes. Shepard surprised Rodney by showing up at his apartment with a covered plate and a smirk. The last time Shepard had looked at him like that, the two of them ended up spending the afternoon in the brig, after rewiring Sumner's room's environmental controls from, "Yes, I am a robot and need to be in a constant state of chill," to Sahara Desert on a bad day. Ta-da! Shepard said, doing his very best Vanna White impression. What's this? Rodney asked, immediately suspicious. Shepard beamed at him. Cookies, made from the very first batch of our very own flour. We made it from that corn-like stuff I brought back from P2X381. Rodney snatched a few before Shepard could change his mind. God, I needed these. I've had such a shit day, I can't believe these were the best people Zelenka could find. If I was in charge... 20 minutes and 4 cookies later, he told Shepard, "You can tell Sergeant Wallace his flour is a success. These seem to be safe." Huh? Shepard asked, swallowing the last of his single cookie. If I can eat these, anyone can, because I'm allergic to everything. I wouldn't give you cookies that could kill you, asshole, Shepard said. Ronnie frowned. Then why'd you bring them to me? I don't know why I even bother, Shepard grumbled. Rodney didn't know what to make of Shepard's behavior. On the one hand, it was strange, with the clothes and the cookies and the constant leaning on everything, but on the other hand, it was Shepard, and normal for him was eccentric at best for everyone else. Not that Rodney was a good judge of what was considered normal behavior. Either way, they spent too much time together for Rodney to really put his finger on what was bothering him. When they weren't eating their meals together, they were constantly in each other's labs, helping each other out. Simpson had told Shepard he was an honorary physicist. When they weren't exploring the city, they were watching movies or playing cards, and there was that one humiliating time when Shepard tried to get Rodney to try his skateboard. So Rodney, despite not being a very forgiving guy, easily overlooked a few eccentricities. Shepard ate Tabasco sauce on literally everything, a little bottle of which he smuggled from Earth in his backpack. He rode his skateboard through the halls and refused to stop even after both Sumner and Zelenka bitched at him. Zelenka said Shepard actually did very little work, but what he accomplished was amazing. Shepard taught some of the Marines how to play hacky sack. He redecorated some of the lounges with the help of Dr. Weir. He read novels by dead Russians and drew stick figures with little speech bubbles on Rodney's notes and let Miko give him highlights, and let Simpson dye it back to black the next day, and kept bringing people potted plants. "I brought you this," Shepard said, presenting Rodney with a strange blue fern. "It was really hard to find."
"Are you serious?" Rodney asked. "Do I need to give you the 5-page printout of my allergies again?"
And then Rodney overheard a conversation while trying to enter the botany lab one afternoon, and everything went to hell. "You, me, a starlight picnic?" Shepard was saying.
"Shepard, seriously, fucking you isn't worth my life," Parrish said slowly. Parrish always sounded like he was high. "McKay would have me murdered, and no one would ever find the body. He's worked with the military for years. He knows these things."
Well, that was mostly true. Rodney couldn't really fault the man for cowering before him.
"McKay and I aren't like that," Shepard said. "He's socially retarded or something."
"Uh-huh," Parrish said. "You're hot and all, but I like my head still connected to my neck. Why don't you try someone a little more suicidal, like a Marine?"
"Yeah, I'll go do that," Shepard answered sarcastically. "Maybe I'll go ask Ford."
"Ew, Ford," Rodney thought, followed by, "Where would one hide a body in Atlantis anyway?" As he listened to Parrish and Shepard change the subject to the life cycle of a type of tree found only on Minaria. Naturally, because everything on Atlantis was trying to kill them, the next disaster struck in the form of Mother Nature.
"See," Rodney told Shepard, watching the hurricane gain momentum on the scanners, "this is why we should pollute as much as possible, to show nature who's boss."
"Maybe nature's thinking the same thing about us," Shepard said dryly. By the time the rain started pouring down, it was too late to evacuate. Besides, there weren't many places to evacuate to. Sumner and Weir had made training partnerships with many other peoples, but they didn't have anyone they could really call an ally. Rodney figured it was because Sumner was an ass. Everyone in the physics lab ran around trying to come up with an idea to save the city.
"Maybe it can fly," Abrams said.
"Get the hell out of my lab," Rodney replied. Until Rodney and Zelenka came up with the brilliant plan of using lightning to power up the shields. It was unfortunate that this idea came to them while Rodney was telling Zelenka how he was almost once killed during a freak thunderstorm. The entire population of Atlantis squeezed into the control room. Even with the military's stiff upper lip, it was complete chaos.
"Okay," Zelenka said. "I will go to Station 1 because I need to be close by to work on the subroutines. Peter, you go to Station 2. Rodney, to Stations 3 and..."
"I can go," Shepard interrupted. Zelenka frowned. "But you don't need someone with a physics degree to turn on a machine," Shepard insisted.
"He's right," Rodney said.
Zelenka sighed. "All right. Dr. Shepard, you go to Station 3, Rodney will go to Station 4.
Rodney said, "But 4's the one farthest from..."
"We do not have time for this," Zelenka said sharply.
"Fine, whatever. Station 4 it is, but if I have a heart attack before I can turn on the generator, it'll be on your head."
"Be careful," Dr. Weir called out as they filed out. As fast as he could move, Rodney made his way to the 4th station. He could hear the wind even from inside the halls. Rain pounded against the windows, and the sky was almost black. Rodney hadn't lived anywhere near an ocean in a really long time, and he'd forgotten how dangerous it could be. Never had these problems in Ontario, he muttered to himself. Rodney, how close are you to finishing? Zelenka asked over the radio. What? I'm still getting there, he panted. Goddamn motherfucking stairs! Who designed this place? His radio clicked on again. Maybe you should give up smoking, Dr. Weir said. Oh, very funny, Rodney said. When he finally made it to Station 4, a huge, black, angry cloud was barreling towards them. He staggered against the wind, and staring up at the sky, he felt himself pause a little too long. Oh God, oh God, he muttered, desperately clutching the console. He needed to act now, or everyone in the city was dead. Shepard's voice broke in over the wind. Rodney, you need to hurry up! Hands trembling, Rodney punched in the code, and the rods separated, coming to life. Done! He shouted, letting out a shaky breath. Over the radio, he could hear everyone cheering and screaming, and even a few relieved sobs. Now get the hell down here, Shepard said. That night, they broke out the emergency rations of wine. Shepard didn't stay long, because he said he and Parrish had to fix the greenhouses, which were shorted out during the storm. Rodney watched them leave together, a funny feeling gripping him. Then he got pissed drunk and ended up fucking Dumais on a couch in the lounge on the third floor. She wasn't a blonde, but she was pretty, and she almost liked him. Afterwards, she shoved him off her and told him he'd been efficient. We shouldn't do that again, she said, slipping on her boots. It'll make us less productive. 45% of workplace relationships are short-lived. Did I just sleep with a Cylon? Rodney asked. He went back to his rooms, alone, feeling relieved but strangely dirty and not at all satisfied. As soon as Shepard's thigh healed completely, they were cleared to go back to exploring. Rodney found he'd actually missed this, the excitement of walking through halls no one had been through in a millennia, the thrill of finding abandoned labs with half-finished projects that had been worked on by the ancients. Shepard, back to his blue tee and khakis, patted the wall and said, Hey girl, long time no see. You're the kind of guy who names his car, aren't you? Rodney said. Shepard looked scandalized. You're kidding! Do you know how much cars pollute? My Toyota gets pretty good gas to the mile, Ford said. Rodney drowned out Shepard lecturing Ford on the horrors of fossil fuels, choosing instead to concentrate on their surroundings, because somebody had to. It was why they were there, after all. This floor was below sea level, which made Rodney's chest tight with barely controlled panic. But even he could tell the view outside the windows was beautiful. He swore he saw fish beyond the shield. Maybe he should suggest Zelenka give this floor to the zoologists. As some sort of weird proof to the universe Sumner was a colonel for a reason, Ford ended up being a great addition to their twosome. He got along much better with Shepard than Rodney, but everyone except those Shepard worked for got along with Shepard. But he wasn't someone Rodney disliked being around. On the contrary, their one common ground was women, although much later, Rodney would realize Ford never took him seriously on this subject. And it was something they talked about in great, great detail. Whenever Ford joined Shepard and Rodney at meals, they'd rate every woman in the mess, while Shepard rolled his eyes. Rodney once tried to fix up Ford with Miko. Miko? Ford said, glancing over at her at a table with some other women scientists and soldiers. Miko, not noticing, giggled over something a Marine said. She really was cute. Cool, I've never been with an Asian woman. Well, you know what they say, Rodney said, smirking. Ford narrowed his eyes. What do they say? Rodney cleared his throat. Once you go black, you... never not go black again. Ford stared at him for a second, then tossed his head back and laughed. You're such a dork, man. Unfortunately, Ford became distracted and started dating one of the zoologists instead, a tall, voluptuous woman from Argentina. Ford was a good man and a good soldier, but he was every bit his 25 years. Dating was a considerably loose term on Atlantis. They adapted it by using it to refer to eating meals together, or going on long walks along the piers, or sometimes, common among the military portion of the population, beating the crap out of each other in the gym. Although, by those standards, most of the people in the city were dating. It was more common for people to just sleep together. How no one got pregnant until after 2 years of being in the city, and then people started popping out babies like it was going out of style, was a loss to Rodney. Back in the underwater level, Shepard snapped at Ford and huffily stomped ahead of them. "Hey, McKay," Ford said quietly. "Whatever you did, you need to apologize." "What?" Rodney asked. "John's been such a bitch to everyone lately. Just say you're sorry." Rodney glanced at the taut line of Shepard's shoulders. "I didn't. Hang on, did you just call him a bitch?" Ford shrugged. "My cousin Liam's gay. I'm hip. I know how to talk to white people." "Aren't you from, like, Iowa or something?" Rodney asked. Glaring menacingly and hefting his gun on one shoulder, which might have been frightening if Rodney didn't know Ford slept with his bathroom light on every night and still had nightmares about Gozer the Gozerian, Ford retorted, "Hey, I'm ghetto, motherfucker. I'll pop a cap in your ass. There's Wilco and Bright Eyes on your iPod," Rodney pointed out. "How are you in the army again?" "Johnny has show tunes on his," Ford said, loud enough for Shepard to turn around and scowl. "Show tunes and songs by old dead guys. I don't think he listens to anything made after 1985. "That reminds me," Shepard said, waiting for them to catch up. "Bates still has my Music Man CD. And I wouldn't laugh if I were you, McKay. Just how many MP3s of Iron Maiden and Judas Priest do you need?" "Rob Halford's gay," Rodney said. Shepard snorted. "No way." The doors to the labs were all open down here, but they looked empty and, strangely enough, clean. Rodney and Shepard poked their heads inside long enough to determine nothing was salvageable, while Ford stood in the hallway looking grim. Shepard didn't say a word while they did this, and he barely looked at Rodney as Rodney talked about how creepy this floor was and how they were all probably going to die. Something about the way the empty labs looked like they were waiting for someone to come back freaked Rodney out. "You've been tense lately," Rodney said, finally, to Shepard. "Nice of you to notice," Shepard sneered. Rodney demanded, "What's the matter with you? Can't get laid?" Not wanting Shepard to know he'd been eavesdropping on him in Paris, he quickly added, "No time to jerk off?" "What?" Shepard asked, eyes widening. Ford said, "I'm gonna let you two talk this out. I'll be over there, somewhere." Rodney said, "I don't know about you, but I have to jerk off every day, or else I can't concentrate at all." Shepard's face reddened. "Don't get me wrong, I prefer actual sex over my hand, but it happens, well, not as often as you'd expect, but with my intelligence and charm. Besides, sometimes it's more satisfactory to just do it quick in the bathroom before a meeting." Shepard's face turned even redder, and he kept darting glances at Rodney. "You jerk off in the bathroom before meetings?" Rodney nodded, relieved Shepard had apparently decided to stop being angry with him. "Yeah, sometimes. The bathroom over by the west staircase is great." The one with the big bay windows?" Shepard's steps slowed down considerably. Then he stiffened and asked, "Why the fuck are you telling me this?" "What?" Rodney asked. "Isn't this what guys talk about? We're bonding, like men here." "We're not 15 anymore. God," Shepard said. "Anyway," Rodney said, mouth moving before he could stop it. "I know you're, not opposed to hearing about jerk-off methods or anything."
Excuse me? Shepard asked. I'm just saying. Ford! Shepard shouted. Get back here! What's wrong? Ford asked, jogging up to them. He put up his P90 onto one shoulder, looking around anxiously. I need you to shoot me. Ford looked at Rodney curiously. What? Rodney asked the both of them. They walked in silence for a little longer, and abruptly, Shepard snidely said to Rodney, So how's Dr. Dumay? And that's my cue to leave, Ford said, disappearing down the hall in the direction they came from. How the hell should I know how she is? Rodney asked. You shouldn't get involved with people you work with every day, Shepard said. What if you broke up and things got weird? Like you're one to talk, Rodney sneered as they turned the corner. I heard you with... He broke off. In the middle of the hall stood a scaly creature around 2 feet tall, with a long, straight tail and many, many rows of sharp teeth. Just to make sure, Rodney said to Shepard, you see the giant lizard too, right? I think it's a dinosaur, Shepard said. Oh, well, in that case, Shepard grabbed his shoulder. Run now, talk later. They took off for the transporter, Shepard muttering, run away, run away, run away, under his breath the entire time. Behind them, the dinosaur shrieked. Blank, white panic filled Rodney's mind, drowning out any other conscious thought. What's going on? Ford called as they reached him. Dinosaur, type, thing, Rodney gasped, pressing a hand to the stitch in his side. Shoot it! Holy shit! Ford yelled, raising his gun. He let out what had to be an entire clip into the thing, while Shepard and Rodney threw themselves around the corner. Rodney peeked out to watch the creature stumble, take a few more steps toward them, and collapse to the floor in a bloody mess. The three of them stood over its still body. Huh, Shepard said. I can tell you, I never expected to move to a different galaxy and see dinosaurs. Bates told me his team once had to fight a T-Rex, Ford said. He poked the creature's head with the tip of his P90. I guess I should apologize for not believing him. Why is everything in this galaxy trying to kill us? Rodney asked. Ford poked it again. You ever get the feeling the ancients were kind of fucked up? Much like when Bates had stepped through the gate yelling they'd had to use their C4 on an honest-to-God T-Rex. No one believed Rodney, Shepard, and Ford about their prehistoric foe until Sumner himself went down to check it out. What the hell's going on here? He asked, looking at Shepard and Rodney like he expected them to have an answer, or to be the ones to blame. The delighted zoologists loaded the bloody carcass onto a spare infirmary stretcher and carted it off to their labs. It's nice to see somebody getting something out of this, Rodney grumbled, watching them practically skip off. Shepard stood staring in the direction the dinosaur had come from, hands on his hips. We should investigate. No, Sumner said from behind them. Both of them turned toward him. As of now, this area is quarantined. Military personnel only. Lieutenant Ford, he called, without looking away from Rodney and Shepard. Assemble a team to go through this corridor and destroy anything that looks even remotely like it could be used in an experiment. Sir, yes, sir, Ford said. You can't do this, Rodney protested. You could be destroying extremely valuable scientific data. Ask me if I care, Sumner said. And that was the end of that. Later, when Rodney asked, Ford told him they'd taken everything and buried it in the earth of an uninhabited planet. Shepard was aghast. A few days after that, Shepard dragged Rodney off to one of the huge balconies. Remember the dinosaur? Shepard asked. No, Rodney said flatly. Word on the street is it was wearing dog tags, Shepard said. But its arms were so tiny, Rodney said. How did it put the tags on?
Shepard just looked at him. Rodney cleared his throat. So the dinosaur had been a human before. Right. Who was it? Someone named Kate Heitmeyer. Parrish said she was the company shrink. You know her? I knew of her, Rodney admitted, remembering seeing her in the mess. But I didn't know her personally. Rodney had never spoken to Heitmeyer. He didn't see any reason to go to a shrink at this point, although he was sorely tempted after nearly being killed in the hurricane. But he had concocted several scenarios in his head where he'd asked her out, and she responded with, "Why, yes, Dr. McKay, I've been waiting for you to ask me." In his mind, they had skipped straight from there to the sex. Kate Heitmeyer was one of those doctors who went into psychology to find out what was wrong with herself. Her mother abandoned her family when Kate was just a kid, and her older brother killed himself after the Vietnam War. On Earth, she'd been a perfect candidate for the Atlantis Project for one reason. No one really knew what to do with her. She was tough in a crisis, she wasn't surprised by anything, but too many of her patients had a habit of committing suicide. When she told her department head at USUHS she wanted him to recommend her for a secret project that would take her very far away, he wrote her a glowing review. The SGC never even saw it coming. Sumner and Weir are saying the person must have found some ancient technology that turned her into a velociraptor, Shepard said. Rodney asked, "Velociraptor? Like from Jurassic Park? That's ridiculous. Even if the ancients turned people into animals, which we have no evidence of, why would they turn them into dinosaurs from Earth?" "Yeah, that's what I was thinking," Shepard said. He licked his lips, looking thoughtful. "Do you think we have any paleontologists in the city?" "God, I hope not," Rodney said. "I can barely stand the archaeologists." They actually had one paleontologist in the city. Well, Corrigan wasn't exactly a paleontologist, just a cultural anthropologist with a minor in geophysics and a dinosaur obsession. But he was as close as they got. "Looks like a velociraptor to me," Corrigan said, after convincing one of the zoologists to let him check out the carcass. "This is amazing. Who figured it out?" "Dr. Weir," Shepard replied. "Huh," Rodney said. "That's... huh. Seriously?" "I think she has some weird hobbies," Shepard said. "No offense, Corrigan." Word spread like wildfire. The official explanation was Heitmeyer must have accidentally gotten into something in a lab that turned her into that creature. The whole thing left Rodney flabbergasted. Nothing about this made any sense at all. "Why make something that could turn people into dinosaurs?" he asked Carson, pacing the infirmary. "How'd the virus still work after 1,000 years? What was Heitmeyer doing down there?" "Ah," Carson said. "Everyone who knows the answers to those questions is long dead." Whatever problem Shepard had with Rodney and Dume, they never got a chance to deal with it. Rodney wanted to think he wasn't acting any different since he'd overheard Shepard and Parrish, but now it was Shepard who was behaving strangely. Not the same weird as a few weeks before. This was quieter and more subtle, almost like Shepard didn't want Rodney to think anything was going on. But Rodney wasn't an idiot, and he could read Shepard's funny expressions, or lack thereof, like the back of his hand. Maybe, he figured, Shepard just didn't like Dume. Maybe he thought she was too cold and robotic, or she was too young, or she wasn't good-looking enough or something. Now, when Shepard stopped by the labs and Dume was there, she became uncharacteristically flustered and wouldn't look Shepard in the eye, when before, they'd seemed to get along fine. The dinosaur situation was a good distraction, though. Nothing said teamwork better than ancient, or was it ancient, creatures possibly stalking the lower levels of the city. Their team expanded with the addition of two more soldiers, Sergeants Stackhouse and Smith, thanks to Sumner and his gift for turning any situation into a military one. Not that Rodney wasn't horribly, embarrassingly grateful for the firepower. About 2 weeks after the dinosaur attack, Rodney headed downstairs to see if Shepard would help him activate a device found earlier that day, because his gym didn't seem to do anything to it. But Shepard was nowhere to be found. He'd had to make small talk with Parrish, who he hated just on principle, and who was totally stoned out of his mind. And predictably, Brown kept glancing at him and giggling behind her hands. Rodney didn't like the botany labs very much. They made him nervous, what with their alien plants and glass walls and extremely humid temperatures. It was an allergy attack waiting to happen. He eventually made an excuse and left, but he came back about half an hour later. When he was about to enter, he heard Parrish say, "Your scary boyfriend came down here earlier." "I told you he's not my boyfriend," Shepard snapped. "That's not what the rest of the city is saying," Parrish said. "Everyone thinks he slept with Dume because you guys were fighting." "He slept with Dume because he's an asshole," Shepard said. "It had nothing to do with me." Of course it had nothing to do with Shepard, Rodney thought. Then he remembered how strange he'd felt when he found Shepard coming on to Parrish, and how equally strange he felt sleeping with Dume, and he connected point A to point B, and he thought, "Oh, hell." Shepard's voice came closer. "I've got to give the link of the..." He stopped suddenly, eyes widening when he saw Rodney. "Oh, hey." "Hey," Rodney managed. Shepard glanced back over his shoulder at the lab. Then he asked Rodney, "I'm heading upstairs. Want to walk with me?" They fell into step together. "I heard a new joke," Shepard said. "What do you call a mushroom who's the life of the party?" "A fungi." "That's retarded," Rodney said. "You're so... are you gay?" That wasn't what he meant to say. For one thing, he already knew Shepard was gay. What he meant to say was, "It's not a big deal if you're, you know." And, "How does being with Dume make me an asshole?" And even, "You could do better than Parrish." But his brain worked at lightning speed, and his mouth couldn't catch up. "Of course, it is obvious," Rodney stated, before Shepard could say anything. "The hair, the wristband, the Rent album on your iPod." "My hair's completely natural," Shepard said, reaching up to touch it protectively. "Lies," Rodney said. "Vicious lies." Shepard shifted uncomfortably. "I thought you knew. About the gay thing, I mean, not the..." "If you don't stop looking at my hair, I'll kick your ass. Stop it." "Does Ford know his best friend is a homo?" The second he said it, he wished he could take it back. Shepard flinched. "Oh. Real nice, McKay. Let's be grown up about this, and I don't have to tell Ford anything. He figured it out on his own." Rodney sneered. "Well, how very modern and open-minded of him. Are you two going to walk off into the sunset together?" Shepard gave him a narrow-eyed look. "What exactly are we fighting about here?" "I don't know," Rodney said, and it was true. He didn't know anything when it came to Shepard. "I'm straight," he added quickly, heart hammering in his chest. "You... okay," Shepard said. "Do you want me to tell everyone there's nothing going on between us?" "No," Rodney answered, because that didn't really bother him, although it probably should have. "Just try not to be so... homosexual?" Shepard asked, smiling thinly. Rodney looked away. "That's not what I was going to say." "Can I ask you a personal question?" he asked Zelenka later that night, when they were the only two left in the lab. Everyone else had already gone to bed, because they were quitters. Only Rodney and Zelenka had the stamina to stay up for days at a time, never leaving the labs. Zelenka's face twitched. "Yes, I suppose. What is it?" He let out a deep breath through his nose. "Hypothetically speaking, how do you know if a gay guy hits on you?" "Who else is here as gay besides you and Dr. Shepard?" Zelenka asked. Rodney scowled and crossed his arms over his chest. "I'm not gay." Zelenka's forehead wrinkled. I do not understand. You know what? Forget I said anything, Rodney said. When Rodney, Shepherd, and Ford presented Carson with his new, shiny, ancient infirmary, he hugged all three of them, teary-eyed.
You okay? Shepherd asked, slowly.
Yeah, I'm good, Carson said, blinking rapidly. He touched the beds, the strange machines, the cupboards, all unused for 1,000 years. It's just that sometimes I really hate this place. Don't get me wrong, I know I signed up for this, but I didn't expect to be so alone. Sometimes I feel like I'm the alien here.
You are, technically, Rodney said. Shepherd elbowed him in the gut.
Shepherd behaved normally on the outside, but Rodney felt like he was suffocating whenever they were in the same room together. Carson seemed to have a better grasp of what was going on with Rodney and Shepherd than Rodney did. He'd asked bluntly, "Are you two having problems?" after Rodney spent a few evenings in a row in the makeshift infirmary office, and when Rodney said he and Shepherd never have been and never would be a couple, Carson made him tea, Minari and purple tea leaves, and said they'd come to a solution soon enough. The dilemma with that was Rodney didn't know what sort of a solution there could be because he couldn't figure out the problem. It was the problem that was eluding him. Shepherd was his closest friend. Shepherd understood him like no one else. Shepherd was a constant presence in the back of Rodney's mind, always, like a bad song he couldn't stop thinking about. When he found something new, he thought, Shepherd would like this. When he walked through the halls, he thought, Shepherd's made these floors light up. But he didn't know what that said about him, and he definitely didn't know what it said about their relationship. It was starting to get to him. One slow evening, he was sitting on the balcony off the control room, watching the sun disappear into the horizon, and Grodin plunked down beside him. Grodin bumped his shoulder. Hey, fag? Rodney jumped. You motherfucker! He hissed.
Whoa, I just want to smoke, Grodin said, putting his hands up.
Rodney's anger deflated, but his face felt hot.
I heard you have some.
Go to hell, Rodney said, getting up and storming away. If Rodney was the kind of guy who could distance himself from a situation, he would have realized something important was happening here. But he wasn't, and the moment passed him by unnoticed. Ever since their horribly awkward conversation about Shepherd's homosexuality, Rodney had been spending more time either alone or with Carson. In the last few weeks, he'd learned Carson missed his mom terribly, as he put it. Sumner was still harassing Carson to find a way to make the ATA gene work in the entire population, and Carson couldn't stand watching people die due to alien drugs, ancient experiments gone wrong, and equipment malfunctions. In other words, while Rodney had been learning to love Atlantis, Carson had been learning to simply tolerate it. They all should have seen Carson's breakdown coming, Rodney especially. There weren't many people he called his friends these days, but Carson was one of them. Of course, Rodney didn't understand people very well. Years later, he'd asked Shepherd, "Am I still as oblivious as I was when we first met?" And Shepherd would reply, "No, but Simpson switched everyone's coffee to decaf last week, and you forgot my birthday again." Carson's emotional state was just one of those things that failed to register on Rodney's radar, like the names of 99.9% of the Marines, or Miko's stupid, ultimately embarrassing crush that ended in tears and weeks of avoidance. It took 3 years before Rodney stopped reminding the kitchen staff weekly of his allergies. "What do you remember about our first year here?" Rodney asked John once. Shepherd went really still and quiet beside him, pretending to be asleep. But the next day, a torn piece of paper found its way to Rodney's lab bench. 1. The floors and walls lighting up when I walked. 2. Being shot. 3. Getting caught selling the you-know-what to you-know-who. 4. Carson freaking out. 5. You saving everyone. Number 5, Rodney said, waving the paper in his face. Which time? Shepard grinned toothily. Every time. I remember more. I mean, I could have written about breeding Lens Culinaris with... But you know I don't care. I see, Rodney said. So maybe Rodney shouldn't have watched Carson more closely, but that didn't stop him from feeling guilty later. Even if he had his own problems at the time. That was another thing, number three. Getting caught selling the you-know-what to you-know-who. Zelenka called Rodney into his office one morning when he was getting ready for another day of exploration. They were on their sixth level in the main area around the control room, downwards. The control room was established as ground zero from the start. Go up, and you found offices and meeting rooms with wide open spaces. Everything else was below. They just didn't know how much else yet. What's going on? Rodney asked, the doors whispering shut behind him. Zelenka raised his head from his desk. His hair was sticking up more than usual. Shepard's been taken into custody by the soldiers. They are questioning him. A cold knot fisted itself in Rodney's stomach. What? About what? I do not know. They say I don't have clearance. Clearance? Rodney repeated. We're on a floating city, millions of kilometers away from Earth, and they say you don't have clearance for one of your own men? He didn't feel too surprised by that, actually. That was the typical pea-brained ape Sumner was. He didn't care what the circumstances happened to be. If he couldn't solve it by being a big man and pushing people around, then it wasn't a real problem. And it was just like Zelenka, not to fight it. Rodney found Ford slinking around the only authorized pier, tossing bread into the water and watching as the possibly man-eating fish gobbled it up. I need to see Shepard, Rodney insisted, deciding to save the "Stop wasting our food, you ignoramus!" speech for a day when he didn't need a favor. Ford looked guilty. No can do, man. I've got my orders. Besides, I don't think you want to be mixed up with a doctor. You just don't seem the type for this, okay? Rodney felt his face grow hot. There was only one thing Shepard could have done to get the military this upset with him. God, Shepard was his own worst enemy. You don't know, he started, stumbling over his own words. I might, Lieutenant, for all you know. Ford's eyebrows shot up. Yeah, well, I guess you did go to college, huh? But I still can't take you to him. But in the end, he did, because Ford was a good kid who liked Shepard a little more than he probably should. Shepard had that effect on people. It didn't hurt that Rodney promised Ford he owed him one. I can bend time and space, he said. I'm the guy you want on your side. When the brig doors slid open, Shepard jumped to his feet. McKay! He didn't look too worse for wear, but he sounded relieved. They're letting me out of here? Rodney touched Shepard's arm. Jesus fuck, Shepard, he said, unbelievably angry. Fucking Christ, you're... And I really hate to use this expression so it goes just to show how angry I am. Up shit creek without a paddle. Yeah, Shepard replied grimly. Yeah, I know. I can't believe you did something this moronic, Rodney hissed. What can I say? Old habits die hard, Shepard snapped. You do this a lot? Rodney asked. Shepard had the grace to look embarrassed. I guess. It's a good way to supplement your income. Oh my God, Rodney shouted. You wanted money for it? I just thought you came on to him. Shepard's mouth fell open. What? He gasped. Who? The Marine you hit on, Rodney replied, waving his arms. Rodney, Shepard said, eyes wide, I'm in here for selling the Marines drugs. Alien drugs I cooked up in my lab and traded for chocolates and trip to Atlantica. Oh, Rodney said, strangely relieved. Then, wait, you've been using millennia-old ancient technology to make drugs? Are you high? No, you know what? Don't answer that. Are you insane? Shepard crossed his arms over his chest. Yeah, it's the after effects of all the alien acid I'm tripping on. Rodney took a step backwards. Really?
No! I've been... It just relaxes you, okay? That's all.
Okay, okay, Rodney said. I'll take care of everything, okay? I won't let them abandon you on some planet or make you a slave or whatever it is they're going to do.
Shepard blanched, but he nodded silently. It hit Rodney, then, that this was a lot worse than Shepard being a slut. He didn't know what Sumner's policy on recreational drug use was, but considering he hadn't seen the colonel in bell-bottoms recently, and not to mention, oh, everything about the way the man behaved, he doubted Sumner was cool with it. Sumner ran Atlantis with an iron fist. Elizabeth and Zelenka constantly complained about him when they didn't think anyone was listening in, but short of death, there wasn't a lot they could do about him. Although, by the next summer, Sumner would be killed by a group of farmers after trying to forcibly take their ZPM. Elizabeth would assign Bates to take command, and he'd run things surprisingly well, and that included turning a blind eye to some of what his soldiers and civilians did in their spare time. At the age of 42, Bates was injured on a routine mission on the planet Athos, which held a painfully primitive people who wore a lot of animal skins. The Atlanteans were there to mediate a trade agreement between the Athosians and the Genii, which was, in Rodney's opinion, like telling a cat and a dog to play nicely. Halfway through the meeting, the leader of the Athosians said, "You are just wasting our time. You ask for more than we are willing to part with." "Perhaps we can persuade you another way," said the Genii representative, a short, twitchy man named Leyden Radim. When the guns came out, Bates struggled to keep control of the situation. The Genii escaped and no one was killed, but Bates was shot in the shoulder, taking a bullet intended for the Athosian leader.
"Guess the Armless have learned to fight back,"
Lieutenant Yamato muttered. Bates bit his lip as Yamato tightly pressed his hand against the wound, trying to stop the blood flow. The Athosian leader, a beautiful woman named Tayla Amagin, nudged Yamato out of the way. She ripped the hem of her long coat into shreds in an efficient way Bates had only seen on the field, and began wrapping his shoulder.
"You are very brave," she told him quietly.
"Just doing my job, ma'am," he said. 5 months later, they were married. Normally, when people married aliens, they did one of two things. The couple moved to a different world, which actually helped Atlantis because it established a network, or the alien spouse moved to Atlantis and took up a job similar to whatever they'd been doing before, except, of course, things like farming. That was slightly problematic in some cases because from time to time, people married alien prostitutes and concubines, who often didn't understand why there weren't any ladies of the night lurking around Atlantis' halls. Possibly due to Bates' job as military commander, Tayla chose to take up residence on Atlantis, although everyone knew not to enter the gym when the boss and his wife were both in there. It was Bates who Rodney appealed to when Shepard wound up in the brig.
"You have to let Shepard go,"
Rodney said, walking straight into Bates' office without bothering to ask permission. Bates didn't get up from his desk. He looked at Rodney like Rodney was a piece of dog shit stuck on the bottom of his shoe.
"I don't have to do anything, Doctor. And you know just as well as I do that Dr. Shepard's being held for a valid reason. We can't give the impression that it's okay to deal drugs out of labs."
"Okay, good point," Rodney said. "But you still have to let him go. He's very important. To the science team, I mean."
"Maybe we can make a deal." Bates leaned forward in his chair. "I heard you have cigarettes."
Half an hour later, Sergeant Markham and Lieutenant Miller were dismissed, and Rodney was left alone with the terrified and suspicious Shepard.
"You're free to go," Rodney said, waving in the general direction of the door.
Shepard's face tightened.
"Just like that? What are they going to do with me?"
"You're off Ford's team," Rodney said frankly. Shepard winced but nodded. "For the next 3 months, you have to be with either me or Zelenka at all times, except when you sleep, when you shower, that kind of thing. I have to report back to Bates exactly what you've been doing."
"Great," Shepard sighed.
"Like I didn't have enough privacy already."
"So I think you should thank me now for keeping you from becoming Atlantis's first indentured servant. They were probably going to give you to Carson to experiment on, and I think..."
He took a deep breath. Shepard's face had gone horribly blank. "I think we should be done being weird, because these last few weeks have completely sucked."
So I have to stay friends with you because you helped me? Shepard asked, voice pitched low. No, Ronnie said. Because I've spent the last hour running around for a botanist drug dealer who's too lazy to take precautions not to get caught. It was the best way Rodney could think of to tell Shepard he cared, but for a long moment he thought it flew right over Shepard's head. But then Shepard's expression softened. You really know the right things to say to a guy, McKay. Much to Shepard's chagrin, Rodney turned him into his lab assistant. He cleared off a bench in the back of the lab and dumped on it a few crates of ancient devices no one could decipher. So, what am I doing exactly? Shepard asked. He picked up one, a weird metal tube with a pointed end, and the control panel on the side lit up. Keep doing that, Rodney said. Just don't get anyone killed. I'll try not to set off any nuclear bombs, Shepard said. Rodney watched Shepard out of the corner of his eye all day. For all his sighing and pouting, Shepard seemed to be having a good time with the equipment. He was diligently typing his observations into his laptop, with a little bit of tongue sticking out of the corner of his mouth in concentration. Zelenka appeared at Rodney's elbow. I need to talk to you, he said quietly. In case you can't tell, I'm a little busy right now. Rodney grunted, looking back at his work. Can't it wait? Zelenka gave him a dark look. No, it cannot. I spent this morning being reminded by Colonel Sumner of the promise I made to take care of the Dr. Shepard problem. Imagine how stupid I must have felt when I had no idea what he was talking about. Rodney sighed. If it helps, you can tell Sumner it was all me. Bates must have told him. I do not care what was told to whom, Zelenka snapped. Of course I will make sure Shepard does not get punished by Sumner's people for something so ridiculous. What I care about is you going over my head, and it is not just once or twice, it's constant. Zelenka's anger wasn't entirely without cause. Earlier that week, Rodney had been approached by Vogel and Simpson after hours. We need your help, Simpson said. She handed him her data pad, which had contained a page of notes and equations. Rodney read over them quickly, then asked, Shouldn't you be showing this to Zelenka? It's his job, after all. Simpson and Vogel exchanged glances. We'd rather you looked at it, Simpson said. Zelenka's smart, Vogel added, but you're smarter. Well, yes, Rodney said, inexplicably touched. He could hardly turn them down after that.